Welcome to Lexington, Missouri, and to Mule Trains, Merchants, and Miners, a walking and driving tour of the Highland Avenue Historic District. For a safe, enjoyable experience, please listen carefully to the driving directions and follow all safe road practices. Keep in mind that all roads are active thoroughfares. Feel free to turn on your emergency blinkers so other drivers are alerted that you are going slowly. Watch closely for approaching traffic, cross traffic, and pedestrians, particularly children playing or crossing streets. While a few stops are open to the public, most are private homes. Please enjoy viewing them from the comfort of your car or on the sidewalk. Thank you for driving carefully, and now enjoy Mule Trains, Merchants, and Miners.
This is a driving tour. Part of it is suitable for walking. The length of the walking tour is a little less than 1 mile. This tour begins at the Lafayette County Courthouse at 10th and Main Streets. Stop or park near the courthouse, heading west on Main Street. Go 4 blocks straight west on Main Street, passing the point where Broadway veers off to the right, until you reach the intersection of Main and Highland.
Mule trains, merchants, and miners, they were all here on Highland Avenue at one time or another, along with a martyr to the Southern cause and even a possible murderer. But all that's to come, so pause here at the corner of Main and Highland while we tell you a little about this historic street. Today it's quiet, tree-shaded, and peaceful. But in the 1830s, you might have heard the crack of whips driving mule trains west, loaded with goods for trading in Santa Fe, then still part of Mexico. Behind the houses in front of you, the bluff runs down to the Missouri River. This street once echoed with the whistle and chug of steamboats running down the river to St. Louis and all the way up to Fort Benton, Montana. Just a block to your right is the road that led down to the ferry at the upper landing in the steamboat era. According to the Intelligencer, an early Lexington newspaper,
"It was no unusual thing to see 6 or 8 steamboats at our landing under the hill. It was a common sight to see a line of wagons a half mile long waiting for their time to move forward down Broadway to the warehouses. These wagons came from all parts of southwestern Missouri and were always loaded for their homeward trip. The main landing or levee was about 200 feet wide, down to the edge of the water, and probably 300 or 400 feet long."
On the other side of Broadway, Highland Avenue led down to the lower landing, with more warehouses, hotels, and rope walks where locally grown hemp was twisted into rope. In the 1840s and 50s, prominent merchants and professional men built impressive homes here on what was originally called 3rd Street. An academy for young ladies was here in the second half of the 19th century. About the same time, coal miners began to move onto the section that became known as Irish Town Hill. Why, there was even a horse-drawn streetcar to take them all downtown. So this peaceful street was once a very active place. We hope to share with you some of its memories and a few of its ghosts. Before we turn down the street to your left, look a little to the right of the intersection of Main and Highland to spot the red brick house at 802 Highland, built around 1840. You can see the basic Greek Revival lines of this home behind the Victorian front porch added in the late 1800s. It has cast iron lintels over the windows that might have been made at the Morrison Ironworks down on the riverfront. James S. Leitner bought this house in 1858 at a sheriff's sale. The 1860 census listed Leitner as a farmer, and he had a plantation outside Lexington with 15 slaves and an overseer. But he also had many business interests, some located at the landing. Leitner was among the prominent secessionists who were rounded up by federal troops when they occupied Lexington in July of 1861. The prisoners were confined on the steamboat White Cloud for safekeeping. But On July 26, Leitner was shot dead at midnight while allegedly trying to escape, becoming an early martyr to the Southern cause. A Virginia newspaper reported soon afterwards,
"His wife went down to the boat early in the morning to take him a change of clothing. And while on the wharf, it was blandly explained to her by one of the soldiers that her husband was dead. While the poor woman was frantic for many hours and her screams were distinctly heard at the distance of 2 or 3 squares. No one has ever been informed with what Leitner was charged, nor have any been able to conjecture."
The Liberty, Missouri Tribune also reported,
"We have no particulars, but Mr. Leitner's past high character forbids the thought that he furnished the soldiers any justifiable cause for the bloody deed. What are we coming to?"
Now, you've heard me use the term Greek Revival. It describes the vernacular style of architecture of most of the pre-Civil War homes along Highland Avenue. The Greek Revival style was popular in the U.S. from the 1820s up to the Civil War. It adapted earlier colonial styles with Greek ornamentation, such as wide frieze bands, columned porches, and wood, stone, or iron lintels over the doors and windows. Keep in mind that architects designed few, if any, of the Greek Revival homes you'll see here. They were built by master carpenters using popular pattern books and applying the style to the extent allowed by their skill and experience and the pocketbooks of the owners. Now back to the homes. What appears to be a duplex at 788 and 786 Highland is more accurately a double house, built in 2 separate parts at 2 separate times. The right half was built around 1842 and was actually used as a bank, while the 5th Branch Bank of the state of Missouri was being completed on Main Street. The left half was probably built later, around 1850, and was always separately owned. Now we're ready to turn onto Highland Avenue to continue the tour.
If you're walking, cross Highland Avenue now to the far side of the street and begin walking to your left. If driving, turn left onto Highland and pull over to the curb to hear about the homes on your right. As you continue the tour, keep in mind that Highland Avenue parallels the Missouri River.
On the right, the Greek Revival house at 784 Highland was built around 1852 by a merchant and trader named Arnold Windsor. Note the stone lintels and sills on the windows. The porch has recently been reconstructed to approximate the original. A brick stable behind the house had quarters in the loft for household slaves. In 1860, a merchant named John All purchased this house. During the Battle of Lexington, it was hit by a cannonball and served briefly as a hospital. After the battle, the wife of Federal Commander James A. Mulligan insisted on accompanying her captive husband south with Price's retreating army. Mrs. John All's aunt, Sarah Hunter, volunteered to keep the Mulligan's little daughter. But because Mrs. Hunter's house had been burned during the battle, the daughter ended up staying with the Alls. During the time Mulligan's daughter spent at 784 Highland, she was the recipient of every kindness, even though John All and his wife were intense sympathizers with the cause of the South. In gratitude, the daughter sent Colonel Mulligan's sword back to Lexington many years later, where it is now on display at the Lexington Historical Museum. The house at 778 Highland is a center hall Greek Revival with a sandstone foundation and walnut frame siding, probably dating to the late 1830s. By the 1840s, it was owned by William Bradford Waddell before he moved to a much grander home on South Street near William H. Russell, his partner in the huge freighting firm of Russell, Majors, and Waddell. Across the street at 685 Highland is a story and a half Greek Revival home that probably dates to the 1840s. Like many of the earlier homes in this area, it has divided lights over the center doorway. The chimneys you see at both ends usually had double flues for fireplaces on the first and second floors. At one time, prominent attorney Samuel Sawyer lived here. He later became a U.S. representative. The next very long block on the right was the center of the 6-acre campus of one of three female academies that flourished in Lexington in the second half of the 19th century, the Elizabeth All Seminary. That's A-U-L-L, a good Scotch-Irish name. Elizabeth All was the unmarried sister of the All brothers. The oldest brother, John, came to Lexington in 1822 and established one of the first businesses near the original log courthouse. In 1825, he was joined by his younger brothers, Robert, who organized the first local bank, and James, who made his first trading expedition to Santa Fe in 1829 and was a public opponent of slavery. James was later killed by robbers in Chihuahua, Mexico, after surviving a trip down the trail in the midst of the Mexican War. By this time, the All brothers had built a warehouse on the river and had stores in Lexington, Liberty, Independence, and Richmond. Today, their retail chain might have been called Allmart. Their sister Elizabeth was wealthy in her own right and apparently a sharp businesswoman. When she died in 1858, she left property and $10,000 in cash to establish a Presbyterian female seminary, which opened in 1860. It languished during the Civil War for obvious reasons. But in 1870, a progressive educator, the Reverend J.A. Quarles, became president and introduced many changes. Promoting students by grades was replaced by advancement according to mastery of the subjects. Graduation was based on written tests. Public recital was also eliminated to avoid embarrassing any of the young ladies. The school offered courses in Latin and Greek, but also in more practical pursuits. An 1883 report by the U.S. Bureau of Education stated,
"In the Elizabeth All Seminary, there is a school of homework where are practically taught all the mysteries of the kitchen and laundry, such as the making of pastries, pickles, sauces, cakes, ornamental icing, and the washing of flannels, ruffles, and laces. The degree of mistress of homework is conferred on graduates of the school."
The seminary closed in 1903, and the campus was filled in with some of the smaller houses you'll see further down the street. But let's take a closer look at the homes that were once part of the school. The Center Hall Greek Revival House at 766 Highland was originally home to Robert All, who did very well as a merchant, banker, and Santa Fe trader. At the time the seminary was founded, Robert All traded this house for one further down the street, and his former home became the main building of the seminary. After being split up into apartments, the home was renovated a number of years ago. The impressive two-story portico is true to the Greek Revival style, but was added during this renovation, replacing the original single-story porch. The brick house at 750 Highland was also part of the campus, serving as a prep school and design department for the seminary. It was sold by the school in 1887 and moved to its present location by around 1900. When recently restored, blackboards were found on most of the walls.
Now, pause the tour until you reach 712 Highland Avenue, the large brick home on your right. Stop or park there.
Moving past several smaller homes that were built in the early 1900s after the seminary shut down, we come to 712 Highland, the largest and one of the most elaborate Greek Revival houses in Lexington, built around 1850. Notice the original stone retaining wall and steps, plus the stone lintels and sills on the windows, and the columns with Ionic capitals on the porch. The brackets under the eaves may have been added to the house later on, as the Italianate style became more popular. A grocer named Hanson Chadwick built this house. He later defaulted on a loan of $10,000 from Elizabeth All. When she died 2 months later, she willed the house to help found the seminary. As previously mentioned, Robert All traded his house at 766 Highland for this one to help complete funding for the school. After Robert All's death in 1881, the school bought the house to serve as a home for the president and to house any overflow of students. By the middle 20th century, it became the home of the late Ike Skelton, Jr., former U.S. Representative. It has been extensively restored and enlarged in recent years. Across the street at 703 Highland is a house built on the site of a log cabin dating to the 1820s or early 30s. A later owner discovered the foundations of the cabin under the house, along with a big black snake. The brick house you see now was constructed in 1842 as a center entrance Greek revival. In 1845, Robert All acquired the house and then sold it to a coal merchant named Beverly Lee, whose name is still on an interior door frame. In 1855, the house was sold again, with four female slaves included. In the 1860s, a grand curved staircase, front porch, and back extension were added. A member of the Winkler furniture family bought the home in the 1890s and updated the porch, fireplaces, and windows with a more Victorian flair.
Now move ahead past the next more modern house on your right at 618 Highland Avenue.
618 Highland was the site of the first Roman Catholic Church in Lexington, built in 1853. A larger church was built in 1873, but partially destroyed in a windstorm in 1880, so the congregation moved back to this site until the current church on Main Street was built in 1898. After that, the original church was converted into a dance hall, and still later a hospital. Indeed, a multi-purpose structure.
Now move ahead again to the two-story brick house on your right at 608 Highland Avenue. Stop or park here.
At 608 Highland is a Greek Revival house dating to 1843 that features tripartite windows with side lights, similar to the side lights found around many Greek Revival doorways. As early as 1846, it was owned by Dr. William Bulwer, who helped treat survivors of the 1852 Saluda steamboat explosion. Later, in 1862, a local man named Willard Mendenhall noted in his diary,
"A few soldiers of Colonel Stevenson's command went to Doc Bulwer's home and stole several of his fine chickens. He heard of it and met them with the chickens and demanded them. They resisted and cut at him several times with a knife. Doc drew his pistol and shot one in the neck. That did not kill him."
The house at 608 Highland is also associated with a man accused of murder in one of the most sensational trials of the early 20th century. Dr. Bennett Clark Hyde, the son of a Baptist minister, grew up in Lexington and attended Wentworth Military Academy. He later married into the family of eccentric millionaire Colonel Thomas Swope, who owned a good share of downtown Kansas City and donated Swope Park to the city. In 1910, Dr. Hyde was accused of poisoning Colonel Swope and several other members of Hyde's wife's family, allegedly to increase her inheritance. Though tried three times for murder, he was never convicted. Later, he returned to Lexington to, yes, practice medicine. He died in 1934, and the funeral was in the parlor of his sister's home here at 608 Highland. He lies in the family plot in Machpelah Cemetery in an unmarked grave. Just down Wall Street to the right of this house, you can park and get out for a magnificent view over the Missouri River Valley. A marker here explains more about the World War I Memorial, with stairs leading down the bluff to Highway 224. Feel free to walk down the 125 stairs. Just remember, you'll have to walk back up again.
If you're taking the walking tour, turn back and retrace your steps now, going past the intersection of Highland and Main to the intersection of Highland and Broadway, staying on the left side of the street. As you're walking, listen to the next 4 minutes of the driving tour until you reach the intersection of Highland and Broadway, where the walking tour resumes. If you are driving, continue slowly now, southwest on Highland Avenue.
As you drive down the street, you'll see three more story-and-a-half Greek Revival homes on your left. The first, 509 Highland, has witnessed history unfolding since the 1840s. Thomas B. Wallace owned the property when appointed marshal for the Western District of Missouri by Abraham Lincoln. George S. Rathbun, a member of the Lexington Bar, purchased the property after the Civil War. He was a Confederate soldier who gallantly earned the title of colonel under General Joe Shelby. The home has a walkout lower level and back with a fireplace that originally served the kitchen. The small brick structure to the right of 421 Highland was once a separate home that is actually older than the larger house. 403 Highland was built by a German couple named Erwigmann and later owned by another German immigrant, Frederick Mueller, who was a coal digger. Your tires will soon signal the original brick paving that goes down Irishtown Hill. This section of the street was named after immigrants who came from Ireland, along with others from Italy and France, to work in the booming coal mines that surrounded Lexington in the late 1800s and early 1900s.
Pause the tour until you reach the bottom of the hill and the intersection with Highway 224.
At the bottom of the hill, a marker placed by the Daughters of the American Revolution commemorates the river route of the Santa Fe Trail. This less-traveled branch of the trail led west to Wellington, at least when it wasn't covered by the floodwaters of the Missouri. Today, this route is Highway 224, the Old Trail's scenic byway.
Now, turn right onto Highway 224. About halfway up the hill, there is a pull-off on the left. Pause the tour until you reach the pull-off.
To the left, you can look across the Missouri River to see the road that led to a bridge built in 1925 to replace the ferries and pontoon bridge used up until that time. Coming across this bridge toward Lexington, you would have seen the impressive walls and steps of the Lafayette County War Memorial on your right. This was also built in 1925 to honor the veterans of World War I and later those of World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. The old two-lane bridge was blown up in 2005 after being replaced by the new four-lane Ike Skelton Memorial Bridge about 1 mile downstream. We'll continue now up the hill on Highway 224, built to lead from the old bridge into downtown Lexington. Notice the ornamental concrete balustrade on your left as you go around the curve to enter downtown.
As you reach the top of the hill, you'll come to the intersection with Highland Avenue. Turn left onto Highland and park across from the Madonna of the Trail statue. The walking tour resumes at this point. If walking, carefully cross Highway 224, which turns into Broadway here. Stay on the left side of Highland, stopping by the Madonna of the Trail statue.
The street leading down the hill just this side of Highway 224 was the original Jack's Ferry Road, later Water Street, and now Commerce Street. It led down to the ferry boat and upper landing in the steamboat era. In the days of the Santa Fe Trail and the California Gold Rush, the ferry business in Lexington was booming. Thousands of teams, whole caravans, hordes of settlers, adventurers, hunters, fur traders, and the military departments all used the Lexington Ferry. The impressive Madonna of the Trail statue was dedicated in 1928 by then-Jackson County Judge Harry S. Truman. The Daughters of the American Revolution placed 12 of these statues in states with trails going west to honor the role of women and children in the westward movement. Nearby markers also commemorate the Potawatomi Trail of Death. In the fall of 1838, 850 Native Americans were forced to march from Indiana to a reservation in Kansas. They crossed the Missouri River here at Lexington. The Greek Revival House above the Madonna statue at 908 Highland is one of Lexington's most historic. It was built in 1848 by a former Virginian, Dr. Edward G. Arnold. In 1852, the steamboat Saluda exploded just after pushing off from the upper landing, directly below this house. The explosion could be heard for miles, and those watching from the bluffs saw parts of the steamer and bodies blown into the air. They landed in the river, on the wharf, and even on the nearby bluff. Many of the victims were taken up to Dr. Arnold's yard, where he and Dr. Boulware treated their injuries. A few years later, on July 9, 1861, federal troops from St. Louis, mostly German immigrants commanded by Major Charles Stiefel, arrived at Lexington on the steamboat White Cloud to occupy this important river port and ferry crossing. Dr. Arnold's 21-year-old married daughter, Susan McCausland, later described what happened next.
When the transport bringing this regiment showed her smokestacks and colors, all Confederate bunting quickly retired from sight, with the exception of my small homemade flag, which had since the secession of the state of Virginia been proudly flouting the world. From the elevated situation of the home of Dr. E.G. Arnold, my father, on the corner of 3rd Street and Broadway. Now, Broadway was the thoroughfare from the river into town, and when Colonel Stiefel's debarked troops came abreast of the Confederate colors, there was a halt. A loud command shouted out, and soon I found at my gates the whole regiment of tinsel, braid, and scarlet sashes, whose rough, brutal assault of language, guns, bayonets, and oaths were all done in Dutch. A long-barreled revolver in the hands of Stiefel himself pointed threateningly at me. "You cannot have this flag," I said, taking it from the pole into my hands. "No, it is mine. You cannot have it. You shall not."
At this point, Susan McCausland's husband, seeing the troops halted in front of the house, rushed onto the scene with his bird gun in hand. His intention was to lay low the entire regiment. Before he could fire, she pressed down the barrel of his gun. The flag fell to the ground and was picked up by some of the Dutch. Stiefel rode away with the flag in his possession. Susan McCausland lived on until 1925, telling and retelling her story many times.
Continue now, driving slowly northeast on Highland. If walking, stay on the left side of the street.
As you continue to the northeast, look across to the right side of the street. Here, a large Roman Catholic church was dedicated in 1873 to replace the first smaller church further south on Highland. The main part of the building collapsed during a windstorm in 1880, leaving the tower standing for many years afterwards. Houses were later built on the site. The house at 930 Highland was built around 1845, probably by a grocer named John Crump. This is an example of a middle-class home in the Greek Revival style, with a hint of Gothic Revival, evidenced by the peaked gable in the middle. 1003 Highland is an unusually large one-story Greek Revival, built by William H. Russell around 1842. In 1854, Russell, along with William Bradford Waddell and Alexander Majors, formed a firm to supply all army forts in the West. Russell was the front man of the firm, raising credit and dealing with political matters. When the firm went bankrupt, he went to New York City, where he made, and lost, another fortune on the stock market. In later years, this was the home of James M. Sellers, Jr., the superintendent of Wentworth Academy and grandson of its first principal. The Yellow House at 1006 Highland is a Greek Revival house built around 1840 with the relatively rare side hall plan, meaning both parlors are to one side of the stair. By 1859, the home was owned by Stephen G. Wentworth, banker and founder of Wentworth Military Academy. More recently, this has become known as the Butternut House, home to a well-known textile artist and teacher who has authored several popular books of textile projects. The house at 1008 Highland started out as a Greek Revival, but was later updated to a Queen Anne style. It was originally owned by the John All who came to Lexington in 1822. A second John All, a distant cousin from Ireland who took over much of the All family holdings, lived in this house before moving to 784 Highland, where he hosted Colonel Mulligan's daughter. 1026 Highland was built around 1840 as a two-story Greek Revival home, but was shortened to a modified Second Empire house after being damaged by a storm following the Civil War. 1102 Highland was originally a small hotel or boarding house. It is the only commercial building remaining at this end of Highland, which joins 10th Street, leading down to the original lower landing of Lexington.
If you're walking, this concludes the tour. You can return to Broadway and go left to return to Main Street. If you're driving and would like to go down to the riverfront, turn left on 10th Street. Continue down the hill until you reach the road on your right that leads to Riverfront Park and stop there.
As you reach the bottom of the hill, you have arrived at what was once Lexington's lower landing. There were several businesses and warehouses here. At Colonel Oliver Anderson's Rope Walk, hemp was twisted into rope for local use. Hemp growing was very labor-intensive, accounting for the presence of more than 6,000 slaves in Lafayette County in 1860, more than any other county in the state. Most of the hemp crop was baled at Lexington for shipment to St. Louis, where it was made into burlap cloth for wrapping cotton bales in the South. On the last day of the Battle of Lexington, the Southern forces used hemp bales, commandeered from warehouses on the landing, to surround the Federal position on the bluffs. With the passing of the steamboat era, the landing gradually went out of use and the buildings disappeared due to fire, floods, and the ravages of time. The Missouri River even abandoned the landing, moving much further away from the bluffs due to natural and man-made alterations in its channel.
Now, pause the tour and move forward down the gravel road leading to the riverfront until you reach the Lewis and Clark marker near the shelter in the park.
Near the park shelter is a display that will tell you more about the Lewis and Clark expedition. On June 20, 1804, Lewis and Clark camped about 4 miles upstream from here on the north side of the river, about halfway to what became the town of Wellington. Their hunters had killed a bear that day, and the journals noted, quote, "A beautiful night, but the air exceedingly damp and the mosquitoes very troublesome." The expedition passed here again on September 16, 1806, on their way back to St. Louis. This concludes the tour of the Highland Avenue Historic District and Lexington Riverfront. We hope you have enjoyed the experience and will take tours of the other historic districts of legendary Lexington.
To return to downtown, take the gravel road back to 10th Street and continue on 10th to the Lafayette County Courthouse. Legends of Lexington Audio Tours is a production of the Lexington Community Arts Pilot Project. a three-way collaboration between the University of Missouri Extension, the University of Missouri, and the community of Lexington, Missouri, designed to promote community and economic development through the arts. This project is dedicated in loving memory to Roger Slusher. Roger was a lifelong Lexington resident and considered Lexington's historian. He taught history at Wentworth Military Academy and directed the Lexington Historical Museum and the Santa Fe Trail Association. With his wife, Sandra, Roger contributed invaluable resources and guidance to this project. Legends of Lexington was produced and directed by Houston Walkinshaw, with original music by Justin Pounds, composer at the University of Missouri. Sound engineering by William J. Lackey, assistant teaching professor of composition and managing director of the Mizzou New Music Initiative. Scripting by Dan Cambridge and Houston Walkinshaw, and narration and voices by the Citizens and Friends of Lexington. Funding for this project was provided by premier sponsors Bill and Julie LaHue, Steve and Wilma Sellers, and the Lexington Tourism Commission, as well as more than 30 other community sponsors. Additional funding was provided by the Sinkfield Charitable Foundation and the MU School of Music, with special thanks to Robert Shea, by Lafayette County Live Healthy, Live Well, Union Pacific Foundation, and the Richard S. Brownlee Fund of the State Historical Society of Missouri. Our thanks to the many other volunteers and supporters from the community of Lexington and beyond for their priceless contributions to this project.